Good afternoon, everyone. I'm John Hodulik, the Media, Telecom, and Communications Infrastructure Analyst at UBS. Thank you all for joining us. And I'm pleased to introduce our next speaker, Steve Tomsic, CFO of Fox. Steve, thanks for being here.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having us back.
So we've got about 40 minutes. And as you all know, please send me any questions that you may have, and I will try to weave them into this discussion, either through the application. You can email me or text me, and I'll try to make sure they get asked. So, Steve, maybe we start off by just giving us a quick overview of the company's priorities and a sketch of the positioning of the company as we look out into 2021.
Okay. Thanks, John. So I think from a positioning perspective, and I'm sure we're going to talk about, we'll go in deep dive into many of these topics over the course of the next 40 minutes. But from a positioning perspective, I think calendar year 21 has been, notwithstanding COVID, and even as Lachlan said, in spite of COVID, has been somewhat of a banner year for us. So if you think about sort of owning the attention of the living room over the course of calendar year, like we started the year, it feels like an eon ago, but we started the year with the broadcast of the Super Bowl, which was an enormous success for us. That then led into, unfortunately, it led into COVID, but then our local TV stations became so important in terms of informing and communicating to the local communities they serve. And so they become hyper relevant through that phase of sort of what the country and the world has gone through. And then that dovetailed into an election season for the ages, right? Where Fox News's prominence has never been greater. And so we sort of were coming to the end of that. We still have a Senate runoff race in Georgia and we have inauguration. But if you look at calendar year 21, it's been pretty amazing from an on-screen perspective, notwithstanding all the issues that have gone on in the world. We enter the year with a fortress-like balance sheet, so it gives us enormous flexibility. Affiliate, if I look sort of through the businesses and through the sort of the revenue lines, affiliate, we sort of ticked off so many renewals over the course of the last 2 years that we're in great shape from an affiliate perspective going into the next couple of years, which are relatively quiet. Advertising, I'm sure you're going to want to ask about, but has been a pretty robust market, much better than we expected when we were sort of in April, May. And then you go through the businesses. News obviously has had an enormous run over the last 6 months, and it's about continuing to be the leading news service in the market. Our local TV stations have again been able to leverage sort of the political ad revenue, and that sets them up well for the second half of our fiscal year. Sports and entertainment are both focused with different aspects to it, but are very focused on getting product on screen and going through all the sort of hoops of production difficulties with the pandemic. And sports has got the added pesky issue of an NFL renewal that's in the offing. And then when you look at sort of those cluster of assets, what we want to do with those cluster of assets is shine a torch on some of the new businesses, use those assets to shine a torch and really cross promote some of the new businesses that we've acquired since the spin. And so things like Tubi, Foxbet, Incredible are all adjacencies where we've seen the power of being able to take that cross promotion strength across those big viewership assets and being able to really turbocharge the growth in those assets. So we set up for calendar year 21 really, really strongly. So I'm sure you're going to want to ask questions more deeply into each one of those aspects. But in many respects, we couldn't be more pleased about where we stand right now.
Perfect. That's a great overview. Yeah, maybe we start with the advertising market. It's certainly been one of the strength of the return of the advertising market has been one of the themes of the conference so far. Fox News in particular is coming off a very strong year, as you said, record ratings. Maybe talk about the success you had during the political season. And then, you know, as you look ahead, you know, can you maintain the momentum that you've recently seen as we move into a sort of a post-election cycle?
Yeah. So listen, Fox News specifically, has had a great run. Like November, we just closed out November, obviously, which represents the 53rd consecutive month that it's been the highest rated cable channel. Its rating since Memorial Day has essentially beaten everybody, at cable nets and broadcast nets included. So that ratings momentum has been extraordinary. It is feeding absolutely into advertising strength. And so we would expect to have a record advertising year at Fox News, even though it doesn't. And that's largely driven by the fact that it is converting sort of that viewership into ad dollars, because it doesn't accrue the same kind of political advertising benefit as what accrues to our local TV station. So it really is driving sort of general advertising revenue. And with respect to that, we've really opened up the client base there. So we've got a much broader sort of palette of clients that are advertising on Fox News. There's no doubt that sort of as we look forward into the second half of our fiscal 21, it's almost impossible to maintain or sustain the intensity of the political news cycle. So we would expect all news channels to take somewhat of a breather in the next 6 months once we get through inauguration and sort of have a settled election result. But as we look at it, and as has proven the case over prior election cycles, as that sort of intensity of viewership dies down, yes, it takes down the overall rating, but our share usually sort of picks up. And so we would anticipate that still remains the case as we get through this current election cycle.
Gotcha. How does Fox News think about the potential from a competitive standpoint, for new entrants entering this space?
Yeah, listen, it's an amazingly strong platform, and we don't have a hubris bone in our body, right? So we don't take lightly the potential for competition, whether it's the existing sort of classic MSNBC or CNNs or the sort of emerging ones like Newsmax and OAN.
Right.
But when we look at, or anybody else that might emerge for that matter, but when we look at Fox News, and I think people take the simplistic view, and many of them are not viewers of Fox News, the Fox News is simply the sort of 3 hours of prime time that take place Monday through Friday. The service and the actual business is so much broader than that. And so it is a 24/7 news operation. It took us $1 billion to get to sort of where $1 billion in cash burn to get Fox News to profitability. It's not a small undertaking to try and sort of compete at that level. People don't just tune in to sort of the editorial and the opinion in prime time. When there's a major national or international news story, they tune to Fox News, and you need to have that kind of coverage and that investment in that kind of coverage for people to tune into you. The brand has got amazing loyalty. Like over the last 5 years, you've seen a lot of changeover in both management and on-screen talent, some of it sort of quite high-profile changeover, and the ratings haven't missed a beat. In fact, they've grown all the way through, so we're not beholden to any sort of one or two personalities on the network. It's a much bigger brand than that. It's not just the linear business either. It is also all the digital accoutrements that go with that. So our website generates enormous amounts of traffic. So November alone, we had close to 4.5 billion page views for the foxnews.com website. So I think when people think about competition, they sort of, their knee-jerk reaction is to think, well, all we need is two or three talking heads to go head-to-head with ours. The business is much bigger than that. And so we never take competition lightly. And as Lachlan mentioned, I think on our last earnings call, we kind of welcome it because it sharpens us up and gives us a real focus. But we think the sort of, in order to qualify to be competitors to us, you really have to put your best foot forward. And so we think we've got a business that has stood the test of time. And every time there's been skepticism about what the future looks like, we've pierced through and hit another high. So we feel super confident about Fox News being able to compete in any environment going forward.
Great. Maybe on the local TV side, you highlighted noticeable improvement ex-political on your most recent, the fiscal 2Q call. Any impact yet on the local side from the rising rates of COVID that we're seeing, sort of the second wave of the pandemic?
No, listen, we watch it really closely because it really is our all pretty much all of local is spot business, and so it is the canary in the coal mine for us. October is almost impossible to draw a real line around sort of what we call base market advertising, because it was just absolutely overwhelmed by the amount of political advertising that was written through October. November is a more normal month. You still had the early few days of November with political in it, and we've also had Atlanta continuing through with even more political advertising. But November, from a base market perspective, was actually up versus last year by a couple of percentage points, which is really encouraging. And we're on the lookout for December. It's still early days in December, so it's too early for us to call that. But sure, from where we were, April, we were pacing minus 50%. So to be pacing pretty much square to the prior year is an amazing turnaround for us. So we feel, I think, a little bit more than cautiously optimistic that our local TV stations are going to ride this through pretty well. And I'd imagine that we'll close the first half of our fiscal year pretty close to a record in terms of advertising revenue, because the strength of the political bid has just been enormous.
Yeah, and maybe on that political, I mean, sounds like it was just massive. You know, October, even November, the majority of the month of a lot of November didn't just end after the election. I mean, is there any way to sort of size it versus what you've seen in the past, yes, you know, some of the past cycles?
No, so if I look at it from a calendar year perspective, so if you say the political gun went off in January of this year and finishes sometime through November, we'll have written across the whole business, largely local, but also somewhat national, we'll have written close to $400 million worth of political. And that is significantly ahead of our most recent record on that was the most recent midterms, and that comfortably eclipses those numbers.
Right. Maybe sticking with advertising, you know, the upfront was obviously noticeably different this year. How did Fox perform in terms of volumes and pricing versus last year? And maybe talk about some of the contracts, or was there additional flexibility given all the unknowns in the market right now?
Yeah, so the upfront was a unique beast this year, and it sort of took place over an extended period as sort of visibility grew around different on-screen assets being available or not available. So we took, and Marion Gambale, who runs our ad sales business, took a tactical view to hold back on how much we actually sold up front. So we took a few percentage points of volume. We took that down a little bit in the expectation that scatter would be there for us and be there with pretty strong pricing, which is proving to be absolutely true. So across the board, we were sort of low to mid single digit pricing increases. There were sort of a little bit more around the edges. There was increased sort of levels of flexibility offered. But now that we move into a very, very tight scatter market, it sort of is playing to our favor.
Right. And then, just before we started, we were talking about the content production side. Where are you in terms of getting the content production back up and running? Are you back to sort of a pre-COVID pace? And then, you know, how should we think of, you know, those shows coming back online?
Yeah, so listen, we were pleasantly surprised that we were able to get The Masked Singer up and running this side of the new year. So we got another season of that in, and we're hopeful that we get another season in the new year. Sport you can leave to one side, because I think everybody's pretty aware, sure, of what's happening in the NFL and college football, and that's a week-to-week proposition that we sort of adjust to. Entertainment production-wise, the sort of the reality and competition shows have fared a lot better, and we were able to get a lot of that away. Animation the same, so our Sunday night animation lineup has come through pretty well unscathed. Our big scripted shows are in production now, and assuming that sort of the California shutdown laws allow that production to continue going, we still fully expect to get those shows on air at the start of the new year as mid-season launches. So at the moment, I think the slate that we have that we expected to have will actually eventuate, assuming that we can continue those scripted shows being produced. They're probably halfway through production in terms of the season, so we feel pretty good that we'll be able to get a meaningful number of episodes through starting sort of that first or second week of January.
Got it. So no new production sort of shutdowns given the tighter sort of rules out in LA and California?
No, not at the moment. And listen, I'm on the lot now, and a lot of our shows are produced on the sound stages we have here on the lot, and the COVID protocols that they have are really, really stringent. And so I think they're very careful, but it does mean that production doesn't happen at the same pace as it used to happen. But we remain hopeful that we can get those shows away through into the new year.
Got it. Maybe switching briefly over to onto the affiliate side. As you said, you're coming off sort of a number of heavy years of renewal activity. Anything you tell us about those recent deals, whether from directionally from a pricing standpoint or qualitatively, just on any sort of either new asks from distributors or additional flexibility you guys have from a D2C standpoint?
So I think that the two things that are worth really mentioning here is, from a pricing perspective, we achieved all of our internal objectives in terms of being in terms of pushing rate. Most importantly around that, we made some statements at our Investor Day around where we expect retransmission revenue to grow. And so we are absolutely, all those renewals put us on a pathway to hit and exceed those targets. So we feel really happy about rate. The other thing that we feel really happy about is just you've seen a lot of sort of tempestuous renewals taking place in the market over the last 12 months, with the exception of one where we were off dish for a period of time. We got our renewals done really, really with the usual sort of negotiation, but without the acrimony. So we feel like, I think that talks to or speaks to just the strength of the brands that we bring and the resonance and relevance that they have, that they're must-haves for our distributors. And so our positioning with our distributors is strong. As you said, we got through a big volume of renewals over the course of the last 2 years, which means that this calendar year and next calendar year are relatively light for us. And so that rate will continue to play for us, and really what is going to drive our affiliate revenue overall growth is going to be where industry subscribers go over the next year and a half or so. So, but we're able to achieve all of our sort of objectives, making sure that we're carried on most available tiers. So we feel really good about the progress we've made there.
Great. Now that you've touched on subscriber growth, the numbers suggest that the cord cutting trends have actually gotten a bit better over the last couple quarters. Third quarter in particular, there was virtually no cord cutting. It just sort of hit the pause button. Just what's your view on the overall sort of direction and sort of the course and speed of the multi-channel TV market? And maybe, what are you seeing in terms of from the traditional side, cable, telco, satellite, versus the virtual guys? I mean, obviously the virtual guys have been taking up some slack and actually, at least this quarter, doing quite well.
Yeah, no, I think to take your final point, yeah, we are absolutely seeing the virtual guys really pick up the pace. I think they're probably the two leaders there are YouTube TV and Hulu that are the sort of the best of the bunch at the moment, but they're the biggest and most scaled. And that's even with them taking price from a retail perspective over the last they've been taking it for a while now, but particularly over the last couple of months where they've gotten price points to about $65 a month. There's no doubt the traditionals have been lagging there, but our macro view is that we will continue at a rate of decline. And then our expectation is at some point that probably plateaus and you end up with what is a core subscriber base that wants essentially live news and sports, which is most fundamental to that bundle. Our hope is that the bundle, whether it be linear, digital MVPD or some sort of new version of over-the-top bundles begins to take shape in a much more sort of core form of bundle at a more affordable and approachable price point. Because we think it doesn't matter which bundle that is expressed in the market, the assets that we bring to the table are going to make are going to be pretty mandatory to any one of those bundles. And so we're hopeful that we do get to that point where we get to a core bundle, and we think that given how much of our assets are so core to that bundle, pardon the pun, we think that we can disproportionately take price for our assets, given that others are sort of trying to have the feet in both camps, whether it be the traditional bundle or going direct to consumer themselves. And so we think our growth, at least in the initial term, will come from being able to continue to take price disproportionately against sort of the other people that are in the bundle, and that should more than offset sort of the subscriber sort of headwinds that we're facing.
That makes sense. So, you know, in your vision of how the bundle evolves, are you thinking sort of, you know, fewer entertainment focused networks, especially as all that viewership and frankly content spend shifts to the internet and these D2C platforms, and maybe especially given your positioning now, maybe less RSNs, which seem to be, at least from an expanded basic standpoint, sort of less core to what people are buying, but what distributors are offering and what people are buying.
Yeah, I think both of those points are right, John. And I think when we look at, should we take our service direct to consumer versus staying sort of, wouldn't say wedded to the bundle, because we've got a bunch of businesses that sit outside of the bundle that are delivering really nice results, and I'm sure we'll get into that. But I think when you look at, if you have a foot in both camps, then it absolutely compromises your capacity to get price in sort of the linear bundle, because a linear distributor can steer you down and say, well, I'll just point my subscribers to your app at a pretty sharp price. And so right. we don't have that sort of channel conflict. And so we think that as that sort of happens to some of our sort of general entertainment channel colleagues, we think that value increasingly shifts to the people that are the essence of the bundle, which is live sport and live news.
That makes sense. You know, you brought up sports as this sort of the core sort of glue holding the bundle together. Maybe we can pivot there, starting with the NFL. How has that asset been performing for you? And how are you positioned going into the NFL renewal? Obviously, it gets a lot of, I think going into the pandemic, we thought that you would get the renewals done by now. Anything you can tell us on timing or your positioning in those negotiations?
Yeah, so listen, I think NFL this year, it feels like a bit of an anomalous year from a sports perspective, given just how dislocated the overall sports calendar has been. And it's also ran straight into the competition from a viewership perspective, from just everything that's happening in the world, whether it be the election or COVID. And so we think, and also sport feeds off having a live audience. And so we think right. this year, in terms of audience levels, sort of we're down a touch from an NFL perspective. But we think there's a lot of factors that show that this will be just a one-off. And listen, NFL is super important to us. From a positioning going into the renewal, there's not a lot I can say. You can ask me 1,000 questions on this stuff, sort of bat them all back. But listen, we feel we're in a constructive dialogue with the NFL right now. We feel really well positioned with respect to being able to get a good renewal away with them. It's hard to put a time frame on it, because there's just so much happening in the world that in any given week, distractions can go to sort of fixing up sort of a COVID marred week or whatever it might be. So I don't want to give it, in some respects, the timeline is certainly beyond my control. And so I don't want to speak for the NFL in terms of when they want to conclude negotiations. But we feel like we're a really strong partner of the NFL. Probably no one has an NFL as its core in terms of a business, in terms of on-screen, as we do with respect to the NFL. We've built we've built a local station footprint that completely supports the NFC teams that we have in our NFL package. So I think there's enough to line up to say, listen, we're in a great position to renew it, but obviously it comes down to a negotiation, and there'll be a value judgment around all of that that needs to be made, and so that'll all play out in the coming weeks and months. So, needless to say, I think we're as well positioned as anybody to renew the rights on reasonable terms.
All right, just one more in the NFL, then I'll leave you alone. Can you talk to the importance of maintaining two NFL packages, through the renewal cycle versus, there's also a lot of thought that maybe that you guys just drop to one, just given the expected price inflation we expect to see.
Yeah, it comes. Listen, I think we're in our third year of Thursday night football, so we're sort of well into our sort of second decade, or I think we're into our 25th year of Sunday. So obviously, when you look at if there is a choice between the two packages, then the heritage that we have with Sunday, as I mentioned, the fact that the Sunday NFC package lines up so sort of complementary with our local stations, that is the one that sort of is absolutely core to our hearts. I think Thursday night becomes a judgment around value. And so if we can make that continue to work, then obviously we'll be in the mix to have a look at that. But absolutely, like the heritage of the company was built around Sunday afternoon football, and I think that is definitely the priority for us.
Gotcha. Maybe quickly on WWE, suffering some ratings headwinds, and clearly that's impacted by the lack of fans, right? I mean, the fans are clearly integral to that property, more so than any other sport by far, right? So what are your thoughts there? I mean, obviously the timing wasn't great in terms of, what we've seen recently with the pandemic, but what are your views on those rights in the future and as the pandemic recedes?
Yeah, so we started WWE October of last year. And you're right, I think the fans are integral to the experience because it's as much theater as it is sport.
Totally.
And so without the fans, it does take away from some of the atmospherics around the on-screen presentation. What I would say is that in deference to the WWE, they've been able to put product on week in, week out with the pandemic sort of skittling a lot of other pieces of production, yeah. Right? So they've been sort of a reliable Friday night installment for us on the network. The viewership is a touchdown versus where we were sort of last year, but I think viewership of sport just generally has been down. And so we'll see once the world normalizes whether that comes back. And then I would say from an advertising perspective, we've actually exceeded our own internal expectations from being able to write ad revenue, even though the audience levels have been down. And so hats off to the WWE for being able to put product on air for us. So we're just over a year into a five-year deal with them, and we still absolutely are committed to building that into a bigger service just generally and a bigger service for us.
Great. Maybe pivoting to sports gambling. Obviously, there's some news last week with Flutter and FanDuel. Maybe start by giving us an update on Fox Bet and just how you believe that property is positioned and maybe talk a little bit about sort of the growth and evolution of the sports betting market here in the U.S. and is it unfolding the way you expected?
Yeah. So, I think. From a macro perspective, I think, listen, there's no doubt the equity markets are convinced about the size that this market grows to. You look at where DraftKings is valued at the moment, and it's off the charts. But this is not a 2-3-5 year sort of play. This is a 10 year plus, which sort of goes to sort of the nature of our partnership with Flutter. So we're encouraged, and we're really encouraged by the extent to which we're seeing us being able to put stimulus in the market to promote things like Fox Bet Super 6 with our on-screen assets and seeing that have an immediate impact on take-up. So Foxbet itself, the actual sports book, is kind of like one degree of separation removed from us because we have an right. option in it. We don't have actual money in that business right now. But if I look at sort of Foxbet Super 6, we expected there to be much more natural demand for that. But then as we went into NFL season, we made an absolute concerted effort across all of our businesses to promote Foxbet Super 6. And so we've seen user take up or registrations for that product increase from about mid to high 1 millions. And now we've got 3.5 million registered users of that free to play product, which makes it from the intelligence we have in the market, that's sort of orders of magnitude ahead of where any competition is on those sort of free to play weekly games. And that for us is in some respects an asset in itself because it helps engagement with our on-screen sort of presentation of sports. If you've picked five of the six results and you're waiting on that sixth result, you're going to watch the game because you might win $1 million. But it also is the top of the funnel that will feed Foxbet Sportsbook. And at the moment, the main thing that is the barrier for that to become a real one-to-one equation is the fact that Foxbet Super 6 is a truly national platform, whereas the sports book is in three states at the moment. So we're in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Colorado, with Michigan to come. And so we think being able to harvest that funnel from a free-to-play game perspective and push that into sports book is going to give the sports book an unnatural advantage in terms of being able to drive player growth. And the most analogous example of that is what we saw in Sky with their Super 6 product with Premier League and being able to drive that free-to-play product into sportsbook demand. And so we're super encouraged by the fact that we've been able to take the power of all of our assets. And I mean this in terms of all of our assets, because we've had the free-to-play game against the classics like Thursday night football, Sunday afternoon football, MLB. But we then expanded that and we had Fox News promoting Super 6 with sort of the presidential debates, the election results and things like that, which were more tongue-in-cheek, but still drove amazing sort of user growth over the course of the last 3 months. And so it's exceeded all of our expectations in terms of driving the top of the funnel. Foxbet will be an investment that I'm sure will pay off over many, many years to come. If even half of the market excitement is accurate about how big this market could be, Foxbet right. is positioned super well. And then we have this option over FanDuel. And then we've also, I think, what has become a really nicely performing investment for us is we participated in the most recent Flutter right. capital. And so we've now put in a touch under $400 million into that sort of head code, which is now worth about $850 million. And so that's real money. And so everything we've done from a sports betting perspective has really driven value for us. And I think most of that value sits below our EBITDA line in terms of those sort of hidden asset values that we've been calling right. out over the last little while.
Right. Just last on sports betting, I mean, just given your guys' experience and, you know, what you've seen in other markets around the world, Australia, the UK, I mean, how many winners in terms of the sports betting market, do you think there'll be like a dozen of these, you know, sports betting companies out there or is two, three, four the right number? I mean, how do you expect it to evolve as it becomes legalized, you know, throughout the country?
Our sense is that the other markets have been much more distributed, right? And that's with what's happened in other markets is you had sort of high street betting shops be overtaken by digital first players and particularly mobile first players, right? And so they've had a much more distributed number of players that have been able to eke out a pretty nice existence. here, I think the jury's still out. I think out of the blocks, sort of the two businesses that came out of a fantasy sports heritage sort of have come out of the blocks really quickly, and particularly New Jersey, you see DraftKings, FanDuel really at the moment dominating the market. If you look at Pennsylvania, that's a little bit more distributed, and it's somewhat dependent on how quickly you are out of the blocks. And so I think the jury's still out on whether this is a two-player market or half dozen player market. And so, but irrespective, I think there's a lot of pent-up demand for the product. And so I think more than enough value to go around.
Gotcha. Let's talk about D2C. If you could lay out for us, Fox's D2C strategy and maybe the thought process behind the Tubi acquisition and give us an update on the sort of advertising demand you're seeing there on that product.
Yeah, sure. So D2C in some respects is a bit of a misnomer, right? Like, D2C for me, when you look at all these D2C announcements, one of the most immediate things that comes with them is a distribution arrangement with a Roku and Amazon, a Verizon and Apple. And so sort of true D2C, I'm not sure it actually exists, because what you're actually doing is substituting one intermediary.
Form of distribution. Yeah, exactly.
So when we look at sort of the flush of new, sort of some of our peers, and sort of I'll distinguish with what makes them our peers and what doesn't make them our peers, but when we look at all the new launches of D2C, they're really, really corralled around entertainment programming and time-shifted programming, where streaming as a business model is probably less attractive from a returns perspective and a margin perspective. But from a consumption model, Netflix has shown the way that the restrictions of a linear schedule is not what the consumer wants. They want to be able to consume these shows whenever and wherever they want. They want to be able to binge them. And they don't want to watch an hour once a week and come back, right? So the consumption model forces you to provide a streaming answer because that's what the consumer wants. Our product, sort of the essence of what Fox is live sports and news, which doesn't lend itself to streaming. In fact, the windowing of sport is actually consumer friendly because it allows consumers to watch more games over the course of a game weekend, right? So streaming from answering a consumer problem doesn't really exist. In fact, I'd argue that the reception capacity of a streaming sports service is less than a traditional kind of traditional distribution, right? So that we're not trying to solve a consumer problem by going streaming. That's not to say though that we've got our head in the sand and we're Luddites around where digital businesses are going. And it's not to say that we haven't made progress with our digital businesses. And so when we look at our sort of overall revenue, and how much of that is coming from digital sort of driven revenue, whether it be digital advertising revenue, digital subscription revenue, it's now coming to a real meaningful number. So our digital revenue across the business for fiscal 21 is going to be a number approaching $1.2 billion. And so so we are making absolute progress there. You mentioned Tubi, which has been a prescient acquisition for us. We bought that. We started negotiations before the pandemic and concluded sort of in the middle of the pandemic. We've seen the sort of everyone has their measures around monthly active users and people have different ways of measuring that. But the acid test, I think, of engagement around that service is actual total viewing time. And so when we look at Tubi, the most recent stat on that for November, we're at about 230 million hours a month of viewing time across a broad spectrum of programming. We continue to drive that TV viewing time by increasingly acquiring new titles, but also putting some Fox programming into the service. So you've seen parts of our local news service being put on, as well as other news services being put on Tubi. You've seen some of our flagship entertainment shows being put on Tubi on a delayed basis, like The Masked Singer and MasterChef. And so we completely expect to expand the number of hours of programming on the platform, and we completely expect to drive total viewing time. We look at revenue run rate for Tubi. We are running at a number that will be double, sort of where our fiscal 21 will be double where fiscal 20 was. And so, and we would expect that growth rate to continue for several years to come, to the point where you can see that the lines will cross our sort of what our broadcast entertainment network ad revenue will soon be eclipsed by Tubi advertising revenue. And this is not sort of like a 10-year sort of macro view of where the world is going. We expect that to happen in the next sort of 2 or 3 years. And so we feel completely vindicated by the use of capital to buy Tubi, because there's no doubt that its value increases by the day. And it's also, not only has it been assisted and supported by the content assets we bring to that business, but the monetization assets, by being able to plug that into our ad sales force, has been super powerful. I think even Tubi, like where Farhad, who is the founder of Tubi, has been a fantastic entrance to our business. And I think even he has been, in some respects, overwhelmed by just the power of plugging into that monetization engine.
Do you expect to meaningfully increase the content spend to drive these fantastic growth rates that you referred to over the next couple of years, or maybe even shift some, or whether it's your existing entertainment book or sports rights to Tubi to try to drive that growth and maintain that kind of engagement you're talking about?
We will. To the extent that sort of 6 months worth of ownership proves out the investment thesis, it absolutely justifies incremental investment. And that will be through all of the areas you mentioned. I'd stop short of saying we're going to put live sport on Tubi, but some of the shoulder programming absolutely can find a home on Tubi. We'll increasingly sort of use sort of time shifted entertainment programming on Tubi, and will absolutely be sort of in the sort of acquisitions market for content. But please don't sort of construe that as meaning we're going into the sort of SVOD kind of budget,
right?
New series. We're not. This model doesn't deal with sort of Game of Thrones like budgets where you have to have massive marketing titles each month that sort of cost you a small fortune. This is much more about having something available for somebody at every point in time, and so it's about breadth of content. So
right. Okay. Actually, last question. We're running out of time here. We went pretty quickly. One of the things you started with was the sort of fortress-like balance sheet that Fox has now coming out of the pandemic. You have over $5 billion in cash on the books. Talk about, how you decide, how to use that cash. I mean, obviously, we've seen a number of smaller acquisitions that have created value along the way since you've been an independent company. Buybacks, obviously, are another option. How do you weigh, are those the two options you look at? And then how do you weigh those two, as we look out into 21?
Yeah. So listen, we've been consistent with this since Investor Day, John. We don't have a prescriptive formula on how we are going to apply surplus cash. So the $5 billion it's definitely overs in terms of how much cash we want to have on the balance sheet. But remember, that came about by us doing a sort of an abundance of caution debt raise in May, which touch wood, we haven't had to sort of, it has been abundance of caution. It's been absolutely superfluous to our need. And so some of that is actually pre-funding a $750 million maturity we have in a little over a year. The remainder is definitely surplus to sort of where we need to operate from. And there you will see us continue to buy back stock. So we, at our last earnings results, we were a touch over $900 million in terms of cumulative buyback against that $2 billion authorization. As we sit here today, we're just short of $1 billion of that. And so we have absolutely every intention of completing that $2 billion buyback. And then when it comes to looking at other opportunities, we'll look at it through the cycle and see whether we invest organically inside of our own business or if there are opportunities to invest inorganically, if the return profile is there, if the fit is there, and if we can bring real value to the asset to light it up by using the platform that we have, then we're absolutely all in on that. But it has to fit those kind of criteria of really sort of us being able to light that asset up with the assets that we have right now as a platform.
Great. Well, that's awesome. I think that's all we have time for. Steve, thanks for being here.
Thanks, John. I really appreciate it. Take care.
Okay, you too.